Now, ladies and gentlemen, meet the press, the Peabody Award winner produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed press conference are four of America's top reporters. Please remember, their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view. It's their way of getting a story for you. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Mr. Ned Brooks.
Good evening and welcome once again to Meet the Press. The crisis in Formosa has increased the fears throughout the world of a major war in the Far East. Formosa becomes the immediate trouble spot in our Asian chain of defense, running all the way from Korea in the north to Indochina in the south. All three of these places are vital links in our defense strategy. Our guest this evening is General J. Lawton Collins, one of the leading military authorities in the battle against communism. Since November, he has been serving as the special representative of this nation in southern Vietnam, the important free portion of Indochina. He has been assisting in the plans for keeping this strategic area out of communist control. During the Korean War, he served as the Army Chief of Staff. He then was assigned as the American representative to the Military Committee of NATO. He now is in Washington for reports and conferences on his mission to Indochina. He returns there within a few days. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview General Collins, are Ernest Lindley of Newsweek magazine, Yates McDaniel of the Associated Press, August Heckscher of the New York Herald Tribune, and Lawrence Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, General Collins, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. McDaniel.
General Collins, recent history seems to have shown that the communists habitually take advantage of a truce or ceasefire arranged in one area to exert pressure in another area. The same if there's a war or shooting in one area or another. Does your planning in Indochina take into account what might happen there if the continuing show of American military force produces either a ceasefire or some shooting in the region of Formosa?
Well, I doubt, Mr. McDaniel, that what's going on in the Formosa Straits will have any direct impact in Indochina. I hope that this action by the president will ensure that no shooting goes off in that area, and that is what we're counting on, really, in Indochina.
Well, suppose we come to a ceasefire as between the Chinese communists and the Chinese nationalists, that the United Nations is taking up just such a proposal tomorrow, I believe. Would that not tend to make the communists put on pressure someplace else, such as in Indochina?
Yes, but you see, there is a truce there which is guaranteed under the Geneva Accords. And in addition to the Geneva Accords, the Manila Pact powers have stated that if the communists renew the fighting in Indochina, then they would take appropriate action to bring it to a halt.
Is there anything out there, either in Indochina or nearby, the so-called Manila powers, to see that to implement appropriate action, and we mean by real forceful action, or is that just talk?
Well, I can't prejudge that. I hope that the Manila Pact powers mean business.
Mr. Spivak.
General, we've been told most of the reports that have been coming out of the area you were in speak rather strongly of the possibility of a collapse of Zim, is it, who heads the country at the present time, the present premier, and that the chances of communists taking over are extremely good. Will you tell us what you found there?
Well, I don't want to appear overly optimistic, Mr. Spivak, but I think that in the past 4 weeks that President Diem, as he pronounces it, has made genuine progress toward establishing a progressive program in his country. And if this program is fully implemented, then I think that there is at least a 50-50 chance that South Vietnam can remain free.
Well, General, just how important is that area to our security and our safety?
Well, it's not of immediate importance to the security of the United States. It is of tremendous importance to the security of all of Southeast Asia. And therefore, since we are interested in maintaining peace throughout the Pacific area, then South Vietnam is of great importance to us.
It isn't important, evidently, for us to fight there. We're giving all help we can, but we have no intention, I gather, of fighting there ourselves.
Well, I take it for granted that we have no intention of fighting there, and I hope and feel that there is a very good chance that there will be no more fighting there.
Mr. Lindley.
General, specifically, what's being done to battle communist subversion in southern Vietnam?
Well, the best way to beat communist subversion, in my judgment, is to establish a forward-looking progressive program. And that is just what President Diem is doing.
Isn't it important also to keep the communists from filtering into the government, both locally and the national government?
Yes, it's true that it is important to keep the communists from taking over the government, particularly in the small communities. And Mr. Diem and his defense minister have just come up with a plan which they call the National Security Action Plan, which will place elements of the Vietnamese army in each of the provinces throughout the country. These men will go in first as military men, but they will take with them civilian administrators, I mean into the areas that have been under the control of the Viet Minh. And Diem and his advisors feel that by having sound security for his own civilian administrators, then they can take over the control of the local governments.
You don't feel that the Vietnamese army has been infiltrated by the communists?
Oh, I don't doubt but that there are some communists in the Vietnamese army, but it is certainly by no means controlled by them.
What should be done about that army? What are you proposing that we do about it?
Well, just before I left Saigon, President Diem and Monsieur Minh, the Secretary of Defense, wrote a letter to me outlining the plan that they have for the creation of a modern small army. So and that army will be very much smaller than they now have, but I hope that with American and French aid, that it can be made into a first-class small army.
Who is going to train those troops? Are we going to do it, or are the French?
Well, I hope that in a few days we'll iron out the last remaining little technical difficulties we've had in getting this program underway. I hope that we will have charge of the training under the general direction of General Ailey, the French commander-in-chief there, with the aid of French instructors. In other words, it will be a combination aid, French and American, but under American supervision.
How cooperative have the French been since you've been out there on working out this arrangement?
They've been wholly cooperative. General Ailey happens to be an old friend of mine, and we've worked together wonderfully well.
Mr. Heckscher.
General Collins, I'd like to ask you some questions about this President Diem. He was a man, I understand, who had not been in Indochina during the wars against the French, who had been largely in America and in Europe at that time, who was brought back from the outside, who is still formally under the discredited Bao Dai. How can such a man be able to galvanize the nationalistic sentiments and make a strong country in southern Vietnam?
Well, you've created a completely erroneous, or you have had created in your mind a completely erroneous impression. If you have gathered that Diem is a newcomer to Indochina, he has been a nationalist from the time he was a small boy, almost.
But for the last 3 or 4 years, he's been outside of the country.
Yes, he's been outside of the country for some little time. But Diem has been a provincial governor in one of the central provinces, and he has been a nationalist of the first order.
And yet I think he was a comparatively unknown figure when he was brought back.
No, not wholly so. Just to show you how well-known he was, Bao Dai had asked him to be premier years ago when the Japanese were still there, and he refused to have anything to do with the occupation of the Japanese, and another man was appointed in his place.
Isn't such a request to Bao Dai a kind of kiss of death on this new leader?
No, not necessarily. Not at all.
Mr. McDaniel.
General, your reference to this dual training job that we're to undertake out there, it would appear that the United States would take over a large responsibility for training the South Vietnam troops, but that the French will retain overall strategic direction. When you were directing military operations, a military commander, I don't think you'd have liked that job of having the responsibility and the authority divided two ways? Doesn't it put the man, the Americans, on the spot, on the spot?
No, I don't think so, Mr. McDaniel. The French still have responsibility for the strategic defense of Vietnam, and certainly we don't want to assume that responsibility. Our responsibility will be wholly a technical one. In other words, under the broad direction of the commander-in-chief, who would tell our chief of training the objectives of the training from a strategic standpoint, but our people would have the responsibility of conducting the training according to our standards and using our methods, which have proven so successful in Korea and other places in the world.
And don't you also think that that means using our money to train them?
Yes, it will undoubtedly mean using our money.
On that, you know, one, you've got two or three different problems over there. In fact, three main ones: economic, political, and military, as you have in most of those countries. You've touched on the military briefly. For any success at all, South Vietnam or South Indochina must have an economic firm foundation. I've read reports of this huge land reform, land redistribution. Who's going to pay, or is the United States going to underwrite this gigantic land subdivision project in Indochina?
Well, we're going to certainly support it, but the Vietnamese themselves will contribute to the land reform program as they will to the military support. Needless to say, they can't contribute very much. But over the next 2 years, it's expected that they will contribute as much as $120 or $125 million. That's not enough for these programs by any manner of means.
Well, how much of a deficit is the American taxpayer going to have to make up?
Well, unfortunately, the president's budget is not in detail, and I can't disclose any part of it now. But I will say this now, that in my opinion, the only way you can aid these people is by, one of the only ways is through money. Not the only way, but through our encouragement and through our assistance and our guidance, I think that the money that we spent there will be very well spent indeed.
General, what about the people, generally speaking? Is there any real, genuine determination on their part to resist being taken over by the communists?
Yes, I believe that there will be. These people have always wanted to be free. They've, very frankly, they've struggled against the French. They've struggled against the Japanese when the Japanese were there. They're determined to be free. And I believe that, given encouragement, that they will also fight against the communists.
Mr. Spivak.
General, you've probably seen some of the reports since you left Vietnam. One of the reports was that there was a crisis brewing because of the difference in policy of the French and Vietnam and the United States. Now, is there any truth at all in that report?
Well, I don't think there's any crisis brewing. It is true that there are some divergent views in certain elements in the French, as between what should be done in North Vietnam and what ought to be done in South Vietnam. But I don't think that there's any crisis on that score at all.
Well, is it true that right after you left, the premier of South Vietnam announced that the United States had been requested to assume full responsibility for organizing and training the armed forces and wanted the French out of it altogether?
No, that's completely wrong. He announced that he had asked us to assume responsibility for the training under the broad direction of General Ailey as the commander-in-chief. And his actual announcement stated that he had discussed this with General Ailey, and General Ailey was in full accord. I think that latter point never got into our press, unfortunately.
What would the broad training of the French? I mean, the French have been there for a long time, and they've been training, haven't they, the Vietnam, and that hasn't worked out too well. I mean, are we going to train them, or are the French going to train
them? We will have charge of the direction of the training, but actually we will not have enough people there. We would be dependent upon the French to assist in the training. But as I said earlier, we would set the standards and the type of training and also the organization. But that has been wholly in accord with the plans that we've developed, not only with the French, but with the Vietnamese.
Who gives the orders on training and who takes the orders? Will the French take the orders on training from us?
That's right.
And do we give the orders?
We will give the orders, and their instructors and our instructors alike will be under the chief of MAG, who happens to be my good friend Mike O'Daniel. General O'Daniel.
General, they tell me that the major problem in South Vietnam is really not communism, but nationalism. Now, that means that they would like the French out altogether, doesn't it?
Well, perhaps ultimately. But they're making trade agreements right now with the French. And I think unquestionably that the French will continue to have a certain preferential treatment, you might say, with respect to trade. I think they're entitled to it. They've opened up the country. They've planted the rubber plantations down there. They've developed the modern techniques of growing rice and things of that character. I don't think that independence means at all that all French have to leave Vietnam.
General, is there truth that the French are also making trade agreements with the North Vietnam?
Well, Mr. Santini is attempting to make some trade agreements with the Viet Minh in the North. I don't know of a single one that's been consummated, however.
Mr. Lindley.
Don't you find among the French, General, not among the military, but among other elements, a considerable disposition to think that maybe they can do business with the communists, with the Viet Minh, and it wouldn't be even so bad if the communists eventually got control of southern Vietnam?
Well, of course, I have no contact with any of them that possibly have that feeling. And I'm really not in a position to give you a first-rate answer on that.
You've not found that among French business interests in Vietnam.
No, but I have talked to the leading rubber planters down there. I've also talked to some of the leading businessmen down there. And I believe that the men in the South, now that Diem has begun to move, I'm hoping, at any rate, that they will feel and be convinced, as I am, that they have more chance of doing business with free people than they ever will with a bunch of commies.
Well, your answer implies that they haven't been convinced of that yet, though.
Perhaps not, but I'm hoping.
Mr. McDaniel.
General, I think the truce agreement provided for some sort of elections very soon, or was it 1956?
Yes.
Which would more or less decide the fate of that country. Premier Diem apparently has just started. The communist regime in the North has moved rapidly, according to all reports, to consolidate its gains based upon the prestige of its military victories. Do you really think there is now chance or hope for the South to get on its feet sufficiently before those elections to keep the communists from taking over the whole country?
Well, it's at least a year and a half until the time scheduled for these elections. I think a lot can happen in a year and a half. And a lot can happen in North Vietnam in that same period. Things aren't going too well up there economically, for example, right now.
In the meantime, we're going to put in a certain amount of military and economic aid and a good deal of prestige in the South. Don't we run a very real risk of just putting the South on its feet for the communists to take over a going concern?
It's a gamble. I happen to think it's a gamble worth taking.
Mr. Heckscher.
General Collins, about these elections... They are guaranteed, I understand, under the Geneva Convention. But now neither the United States nor President Diem signed the Geneva Agreement. It's sometimes said that those elections never will come off, that we may not favor them when the time comes near, and that President Diem may not. Would you comment on that?
Well, of course, that's some time off in the future, and I've been concerned with the present, very actively concerned with the present, so I can't make any predictions about the elections.
Well, they're planning to hold, as I understand, a National Assembly. Is that going forward? Is the basis?
Yes, that is one of the programs which Diem is working on. And I expect that in a matter of a few weeks that the plans for a provisional National Assembly will be announced by the President.
To go back for 1 minute, if I may, to the other approach, which is sometimes said to be typified by the French toward the problem of Indochina, I understand there are some people who think that the best hope would be to take Indochina away from from China by playing upon the nationalist forces that are represented by Ho Chi Minh as well as by the South. That, in other words, if you do trade with the North of Vietnam, that you find people there who are more afraid of Chinese imperialism than they are of any other kind of imperialism, and that we might have a united Titoist kind of state.
Well, I wouldn't trust it. Ho Chi Minh is definitely a communist, so is General Giap, their commander, and the leading people up there are communists, professed communists.
Mr. Lindley.
General, I might ask you a question, causing you to look back. From where you are now, given the problem you're dealing with, You still feel that we made the right decision in Korea in accepting a stalemate, or do you think we'd done better to have pressed the thing further there?
Oh, Mr. Lindley, that's going back too far now for me. Once again, I'm concerned with something that is present, and I wouldn't hazard a postmortem on that at this time.
General,
Mr. Spivak.
I have something that is present. There's been considerable difference of opinion, as you know, on the wisdom of cutting the size of our army at this time of world crisis. Now, you were former chief of staff. Will you give us your judgment on that?
That's the last thing I would want to do, Mr. Spivak. You've got a corking good chief of staff right now in Matt Ridgway, and when I cease being chief of staff, I cease being chief of staff.
Well, now, Matt Ridgway, as I understand it, has been against the cut. Does that mean that you agree with Matt Ridgway when you
no,
say
I'm
that?
No, I'm not going to get involved in any of the present discussion. It is not my responsibility. And I remember hearing the president make a very sage remark once, and he said that if everybody in Washington would stick to their own job and not try to do somebody else's job, it would be a very much happier place, and I agree with you.
Well, General, you are our military advisor to NATO. Would you answer this question? I think you were in on the discussions about arming the Germans, were you not?
Right.
Are you for arming the Germans?
Very much so.
Do you think it makes sense to add 500,000 German troops when we begin cutting our own troops?
I don't think there's any relationship in the way in which you phrase it, at any rate. In fact, you might make an argument that if you increase NATO by 500,000 Germans, that you could possibly reduce our forces. I don't say that I follow that argument, but I'm certainly in favor of rearming Germany, primarily because of the location of Germany in NATO, because of their great capacity as able people in Central Europe. And I think that with them in NATO, they'll be safer and less likely to go off on a tangent again than they would be if they were left on their own.
General, to come back to Indochina, then, if we train their troops and give them military aid and a shooting war starts from the north, can we possibly stay out of a shooting war if we're that far committed?
Well, I don't know. We are committed to a certain extent under the North Atlantic, under the Manila Pact, but we are not definitely committed. The Manila Pact powers have said that if the fighting commences again, they will take appropriate steps in their usual following their constitutional processes. I would say that we would have a certain moral obligation, but whether we did anything or not would depend upon the circumstances at the time.
And we haven't yet said what we're going to do, in spite
of
the fact that I think both Secretary Dulles and President Eisenhower said that it's important to let the communists know exactly what we're going to do in advance so that they won't do it.
Well, you'll have to ask Mr. Dulles that one now.
No, I was asking whether we have made any firm commitments.
Oh, no, we have made no firm commitments.
Mr. Lindley.
If your optimism is not borne out by events and southern Vietnam is lost, is there any hope of holding Cambodia and Laos?
Well, now, when you say my optimism, Ernest, remember, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yes.
Worth taking to continue to support South Vietnam. Now, if Vietnam is lost to the communists, it is not wholly, the rest of Southeast Asia is not necessarily lost. But certainly, Vietnam occupies, in my judgment, a key spot in Southeast Asia. And its fall would very seriously threaten not only Cambodia and Laos, but Burma, Malaya, and India.
Do you think the Cambodia and Laos are fully aware of that? How much attention are you paying to events in those states?
Well, of course, I have no immediate responsibility there, but we are paying attention to events in Cambodia and Laos, and I think one of the most hopeful developments in all of Southeast Asia is the manner in which the young king of Cambodia is taking hold of the situation there.
I'm sorry to have to interrupt, General, but our time is up. Thank you very much, General Collins, for being with us.